This is your AEW Dynamite review for March 4th, 2020, from Broomfield, Colorado, just outside of Denver, the Mile High City. And I know we had some people who were actually at the show tonight. Maybe they'll call in a little bit later. Hot crowd in Denver. I think Denver tends to be a hot city in terms of the crowds, from what I can remember. But hello to everybody in the chat. If you can hear me, give me a hell yeah. So I know everybody is on board. The first Dynamite review here for the month of March. This is the post-revolution episode of Dynamite. All the fallout from the pay-per-view. On the whole, I thought, you know, a pretty good show. I would not put it in the realm of one of the best shows that they've done. They've been on a bit of a roll recently. The last two episodes of Dynamite, I think, have been some of the best that they've ever done. I wouldn't put this in that category, but I thought it was a pretty solid show. You know, move some of the stories along. We got some teases of some new people coming in. More teases for the Exalted One. A tease of a new superstar coming in, managed by a certain wrestling legend. So we're going to get to all that. Poll is open for you to vote right now on Twitter, at Solomonster. You can make your voices heard. I see all the hell yeahs in the chat. Good to hear from everybody. Everybody on board here on a Wednesday night, right in the middle of the week. Fear not, only two more work days before the weekend. That's how I look at it. But yeah, go to at Solomonster on Twitter and let me know thumbs up, thumbs down. Please smash that like button on this video. And of course, as always, Super Chats are open, including the disappointed Solomonster for $5, Russo on a poll for $10, and the brand new creepy Jeff Hardy for $20 or more. All the other ones you'll see throughout the night are totally random, but the creepy Jeff Hardy is the new one for $20 and above. The new AEW champion, Jon Moxley, did beat Chris Jericho at Revolution to win the championship. He opened the show tonight in the ring with a promo, got a hell of a reaction. They wouldn't even let him speak. Moxley came out, got a hero's welcome, said, you know, AEW is a beautiful thing. This is all about professional wrestling. I think these guys relish in the ability to come on these shows and use words that they couldn't use before. Wrestling. You see Aaron Stevens, right? The former Damian Sandow in the NWA. It's like a bit that he has now where he says belt. He says belt over and over again. Look, I can say belt. It's like they're free. They've freed their vocabulary. They don't have to be afraid. They don't have to be ashamed to say these words. Said the belt belongs to the AEW fans. It doesn't belong to him. And they help bring pro wrestling back. Says, look, I know it's not over between me and the Inner Circle. They're coming after me. I dare them. That brought out Chris Jericho in the Inner Circle. And Jericho said the Moxley era sucks ass. Which got a new crowd chant of you suck ass. Directed at Jericho. He said Moxley's win was based on a lie. Spent 3 months training to face a guy with one eye. Not somebody who could see out of both. So Jericho's very upset that he was bamboozled at the pay-per-view. He was led to believe that Moxley was a one-eyed man. And of course, as it turned out, Moxley's eye was all healed up. Jericho was very upset about this. And he said, look, guarantee that you are not going to walk out of this building on your own power tonight. If you do, I'm going to take a 30-day absence. No, you know what? I'm going to take a 60-day leave of absence from AEW. And he says, look, I've got a plan. You're not as smart as you think you are. So the first thing I did, I went to the Fozzy website because I know Jericho's got a tour coming up soon. He's got some tour dates coming up with Fozzy. And so I said, well, maybe this is going to be the 60-day vacation so that he can go on tour with his band. And I went, and I see that Fozzy does not have tour dates until April. In fact, not until the middle of April. 60 days would have him back not long after that. Doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. So that told me maybe he's not leaving. So we would find out at the end of the night whether that was the case or not. Dive into some of these early Super Chats. Want to show my appreciation to JD Starlord with the $15. Thank you. Jose Inoua with the $10 Super Chat. Says, Pac. becoming a star, the same guy that was jobbed out to Enzo Amore. Get to Mario Ballantine with the super chat. Infamous GS, thank you for the $10, my friend. Said, did Jericho and the Inner Circle just reference The Shield at the end? I wouldn't say that anybody who does a group powerbomb is necessarily ripping off The Shield. Believe it or not, that did exist before The Shield came along. So, no, I don't think they were necessarily ripping anybody off. SCU and Colt Boom Boom Cabana making his in-ring Dynamite debut against The Dark Order. There's a lot of speculation around The Dark Order heading into the show tonight. Is this going to be the night that the Exalted One reveals himself? You know, Matt Hardy, he's a free agent now. There's been a lot of rumors, a lot of innuendo around Matt Hardy. Is he going to be the Exalted One? He's a free agent. He's not under contract anymore. Would we see him? Dark Order is now the number one ranked tag team in the company. That's what Excalibur told us here before this match. So Daniels, about midway through, made a hot tag to Kazarian. And all eight men jumped in. It turned into just a giant brawl. Kazarian used a cutter on Reynolds for a near fall. Colt Cabana tagged in, and he hit his Chicago Skyline move, which is pretty cool. I gotta say, you know, Colt Cabana, he's been around a long time. I know not everybody is a fan of his. I know he's one of these guys he's sort of been around for so long that you almost watch him and it's like, all right, whatever, it's Colt. You know, there's nothing overly exciting about him, I guess, because he's been around, you know, for a long time. But some of his moves, I'm a big fan of some of his moves. Chicago Skyline's a pretty cool move, and I love the Superman pin. You know, we saw him use it in the NWA when he went to the NWA recently. So he used the Superman pin to pin Reynolds to win the match. So then Evil Uno, he gets on the microphone, he's none too happy, and he's ranting and raving and screaming and hollering about how this isn't how it's supposed to be. The Exalted One is going to be very upset. He's going to be pissed. He's going to be furious. And when he arrives, heads are going to roll. When he arrives, for anybody wondering if it's a he or a she, we finally had the gender reveal party tonight here on Dynamite. It's a boy, everybody. It's a boy. So no Matt Hardy. As I said before, he is officially a free agent as of March 1st. He is free and clear. There's no non-compete. He can go wherever he wants, whenever he wants. He said the other day that he's going to take in all wrestling. He's going to watch Raw. He's going to watch SmackDown, NXT, Impact, Ring of Honor, MLW, New Japan, AEW Dark, AEW Dynamite. I'm sure Rebby Hardy heard this and said, what the fuck? I got to get laid. You can't just do nothing but watch wrestling all the time. So he's taking his time. Although, based off of the latest Free the Delete, I think that gave us a bit of a hint about what his future may be. But because the Young Bucks were featured in the latest episode of his YouTube show. So he may not be part of the Dark Order. He may not be the Exalted One, but it certainly seems like Matt Hardy is on his way into AEW in some form or fashion. We got highlights from what they are calling the greatest tag team match of all time. Excalibur said it was the greatest Young Bucks match that he ever saw. Jim Ross said that he has called a lot of great tag team matches in his day, but none as good as the one that we saw at Revolution, with Kenny Omega and Hangman Page beating the Young Bucks. It is the greatest tag team match, he said, that he has ever had the privilege of calling. Think about how many tag team matches Jim Ross has called, going all the way back to the UWF, NWA, WWE, New Japan, and now AEW. I'll say this much. I feel like the match is too fresh in everyone's mind to really say definitively it's the best anything. I won't go that far. You know, one of my favorite all-time tag team matches is Steve Austin and Triple H against Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho. And it's a damn shame that WWE won't ever talk about the match. They won't show highlights of it. They won't even acknowledge its existence. I get it. I understand. I don't know that I would put this match ahead of that one, but look, it was an outstanding match. It was the best match of the night, tag team match of the year so far, no doubt about it. And I think it was the match that should have silenced all of the people, all the critics, who in some cases still foolishly say that the Young Bucks, oh, they're a bunch of spot monkeys. They don't know psychology. They don't know ring psychology. I really feel like the people who say that, here in 2020, the people who still use that and levy that against the Young Bucks as a criticism, they don't watch the Young Bucks. Or they watched them years ago, but they haven't watched any of their recent matches in the last 2 or 3 years. It is not a valid criticism. Yes, they can do that video game style, super kick, super kick, super kick, you know, kind of like the Lucha Bros, move, move, move. But to say that they don't know how to work, they don't know ring psychology, you clearly don't watch Young Bucks matches. It's just not a valid criticism. You saw plenty of psychology in that match at Revolution. You cannot objectively watch that match and make that argument anymore. It's no longer a valid criticism. But it was a great tag team match. I won't sit here and tell you it was the greatest. Big Swole against the Librarian, Leva Bates. Swole won in less than 90 seconds, hit her dirty dancing finish. It wasn't good. It wasn't bad. Didn't have enough time to be either one. It was basically a Superstars or a Wrestling Challenge style squash. It was a squash win for Swole. They're trying to build her up in the division. And that division still needs a lot of help. I mean, I that division is still waiting for that big breakout match. And hopefully, they're on the lookout for more female talent. And look, if there's any unhappy or dejected female talent in WWE, hopefully when the time comes, if they're not being utilized in a way that they're happy with, you know, maybe AEW can use some additional talent in that division. Because I still argue here, and it's March now, March 2020. That is still the weak link on AEW television, is that women's division. We had Cody and his neck tattoo out for a promo. Cody comes out. He says he lost to MJF at Revolution. And when you get to work on a pay-per-view, it's a big deal. You get a bonus when you win. You get the purse money, as JR would say. So obviously he was very upset about losing. He called out MJF, says that he wants him to say that, you know, he beat him fair and square, which of course, if you remember at the pay-per-view, MJF did not. He used the Dynamite Diamond Ring, used a foreign object, or as they used to say in WCW many years ago, he used an international object to win the match. Instead of MJF coming out, who should come out but Jake the Snake Roberts? Jake comes out, he gets a great reaction. He takes the microphone. Of course, he is the maestro of the mic. He says, I hate to spoil the party. I don't want to hear Cody cry and bitch and moan. Because I never bitched and moaned when I lost the match. I don't want Cody to do that either. Says, you got your ass kicked. And I'm here to slay you. I'm not here to praise you. I'm here to slay you. Says, I've got a client. The dark side is coming to AEW. And once their roots take control, the Phoenix will rise from the ashes. It's taken him 20 years, he says. 20 years to get clean and right. I've earned this, he said. Says, I'm not going to play nice. I'm not here to be a nice boy. I'm going to be on the outside when my client faces you. You can bring Arn Anderson. And he insulted Arn Anderson to loud jeers from the crowd. Says, what the snake wants, the snake gets. All he wants is Cody's share of the pie. He says, never turn your back on someone that you respect or that you are afraid of. And so what does he do? He does exactly that. He turns his back on Cody and he leaves. This was fantastic. Now, Jake was a name that some people threw out there as, you know, a possibility for the Exalted One. Yeah, we heard a lot of names. People, besides Matt Hardy and Luke Harper, you know, people said, what about Raven? We saw Raven make an unannounced. They never acknowledged him, but he was in the crowd a few weeks ago. And that was clearly done. I mean, apparently he was local in Atlanta that week. But clearly that was done just to throw people off, just to fuck with people, which I think is great. I thought he would have been a bad choice for the Exalted One. But just to fuck with people. Oh, there's Raven, you know. But people floated Jake. I heard a few people float Jake's name as a potential name for the Exalted One. And for a moment there, when he came out here and was talking about his client and the dark side, I thought, well, is this the big reveal? And then they took it in a completely different direction. I'm thinking like a lot of you are. I think a lot of people have the same thought, which is that Jake's going to be managing Luke Harper. Now, it could be Lance Archer. And unless I missed something, I thought Archer was either going to be, there was going to be some kind of a video for him, or he was going to be interviewed and on the show. And unless I stepped away to, you know, grab a snack and I missed it, I didn't see Lance Archer anywhere on the show tonight. I feel more than Archer, it's probably Harper. I almost think it's got to be Luke Harper. I think Jake the Snake Roberts managing Brody Lee. That's a pretty damn good combo. And that's a hell of a feud for Brody Lee. If he's feuding with Cody, the biggest babyface in the company, right out of the gate, that's a pretty big spot for him to be in. But imagine that. Luke Harper gets Jake the Snake Roberts as his manager, while Eric Rowan is over on Raw walking around with a fucking animatronic spider. Who got the better end of this deal? Gee, I wonder. And look, maybe I'm getting ahead of myself. Maybe I'm talking something into existence that's not meant to be. Maybe it's not going to be Harper. Maybe it's somebody else. It seems like the right fit to me. I think that's a combination that could work. So we'll see. I thought this segment, though, was fantastic. And Jake still, after all these years, and how long has this guy been around for now? 30 years? 35 years? All the shit that he's been through with the drugs and the alcohol. This guy should have been dead probably 5 times. After everything, he is on another level from everybody else when it comes to promos. And his voice, you know, his voice is obviously thrashed, kind of like mine tonight. But, you know, his voice, as raspy as it is, as hoarse as it is, he sounds like, a lifetime chain smoker. It kind of works for him. You know, and you have to pay closer attention. You got to work that much harder to listen to every word that he says because he doesn't have this big booming voice. But he never had the big booming voice. You go back to watch his promos in the late 80s, 1990, 1991. He would talk very low, very quietly. That was part of his style. He wanted you to lean in, pay attention to what he was saying. Everybody else can scream and shout. That's what everybody did back then. Everybody screamed. Hulk Hogan screamed. Macho Man screamed. Ultimate Warrior screamed. Road Warrior screamed. Ric Flair screamed. What can you do to set yourself apart from everybody else? Talk very low. And that was one of the hallmarks of the old Jake Roberts promo. So that voice, it just makes him sound more sinister. But I think, look, Jake is a guy that has a lot to offer. Not in the ring, but on the mic, maybe behind the scenes. The question with him has always been, can he stay on the straight and narrow? He has his good days. He has his bad days. Yeah, I can't sit here and tell you that the guy hasn't had a drink in the last 3 years. But he's doing a lot better than he used to be doing before. DDP saved this guy's life. And he's going on tour. He's doing his one-man shows. He was all over the Jericho cruise. He was one of the stars of the cruise, you know, doing his show every night. I think he needs that. I think he needs to go on the road and be around people and tell these stories. So if he can contribute in that way to AEW, if he can give the rub to somebody like a Luke Harper, if it is him on the way in, you know, then that's going to be a huge benefit for the company. And it's going to be a huge benefit for whoever this client is that he's going to be debuting soon. Now, Harper, I don't believe he's free yet of his contract, or if he is, it's right around this time. The belief is that he is either signed or going to sign with AEW, and the belief is that they're saving him for the March 18th episode, which is 2 weeks from tonight. They're going to be in Rochester, New York. That is his hometown. And so that might be where we get to see his debut, and if he is Jake's client, it seems like that is as good of a night as any to debut him, and he comes out, gets a big reaction. So we'll see who it is, but I thought this was great. Jacob Donnelly, thank you for the $10 Super Chat. And Brian, thank you for the $5. Again, the Super Chats are open. We got the new $20 Freaky Jeff Hardy one, among all the others. So if you want to contribute, that is the way to do it. And I'll read that on the air here for you. The Bastard Pack against Chuck Taylor. This after Pack's win over Orange Cassidy at Revolution. Cassidy was out there. He was on the outside of the ring with Trent. I got to say this about Jim Ross. I don't know if anybody else, I'm sure some of you picked up on this. But Jim Ross, basically at one point early in the match on commentary, and we don't get to see Chuck Taylor focused on too much here in AEW. We see him in tag matches with Trent. We don't see very many singles matches with Chuck Taylor in AEW. So tonight he had a singles match against Pac. And Jim Ross is on commentary. And he is basically dragging this guy. He is dragging Chuck Taylor on commentary for his physique. He's taking pot shots at him for his physique. Kind of reminded me of what he did to that one guy in the Beyond the Mat documentary. It's like, you know, you got to get on the WWF diet, kid. Whatever you may think that diet back then consisted of. And, you know, but he's talking about him like he's not a body guy. I like JR. You know, he's not what he once was, but he's older. You know, look, Father Time, you can only fight Father Time for so long. I like JR. I respect him. He's one of the best of all time. But this body guy bullshit has got to go. This body guy bullshit is so dated. There is nothing wrong with Chuck Taylor's physique. Not everybody is a body guy. Pac walks out there. He's a small guy, but he's cut to shreds. Looks like $1 million. They have other guys on that roster. Look like $1 million. Not everybody is meant to look like Scott Steiner. Not everybody is meant to have abs like Finn Balor. There's nothing wrong with Chuck Taylor's, but you would think that Chuck Taylor had a spare tire, like he was carrying an extra 30 pounds around on him. It's just such a dated mentality. And, maybe it didn't bother other people, but I picked up on it. I know some of you must have. I just think it's bullshit. So Pac was choking him out, and Chuck fights to his feet, hits a drop kick, hits a plancha, falcon arrow for a near fall. Pac connects with a slingshot cutter. Moonsault misses, gets the brutalizer locked on. That's pretty much all she wrote. Pac picks up the win via submission. So then after the match, Trent gets up in Pac's face. So they're nose to nose, face to face, in the ring. Orange Cassidy comes in. He pushes Trent aside. He takes his jacket off. He's all up in Pac's face now. And out come the Lucha Bros. Pentagon and Phoenix. Double super kick to Cassidy. They beat down the Best Friends. And Pac grabs a mic. He says, "Listen up, scumbags. We are the Death Triangle. Nobody is safe." As Phoenix heads up top and hits he hits Orange Cassidy with the double stomp into the package pile driver by Pentagon. And here I thought that maybe we would start to see Pentagon hopefully soon branch out into singles competition. Yeah, like he did in Lucha Underground. My first exposure to Pentagon was not as a tag team wrestler. My first exposure to him in Lucha Underground was as a singles guy who went around breaking people's arms. And he became one of the most popular guys for a while there. He had all the buzz around him in wrestling. Then he started tagging with his brother Phoenix, and they became the Lucha Bros, and all of a sudden he went from being a singles guy to a tag team guy. I kind of miss singles Pentagon. I was kind of hoping that maybe they would build him up. He could be built up as a contender for Jon Moxley's title, but that's not the direction they're going in. And not only is he staying as part of a team with Phoenix, but now he's going to be part of a trio, I guess. And that's fine. It makes me wonder if we're going to be getting six-man titles soon here in this company. You know, if they may be debuting trios belts soon. I mean, think of all the trio matches that we see on Dynamite every week. whether it's the Inner Circle, whether it's the Best Friends, whether it's SCU, now we have the Death Triangle, you know, the Butcher and the Blade and MJF, or whatever different combinations we see each week. You know, it wouldn't shock me at all if at some point they introduce Trios titles. Well, we had Trios titles in Lucha Underground as well. Lord Frieza, thank you for the $4.99 super chat. Solid Monster, AEW is the product to actually sit down and watch. Darby Allin is a superstar. He for sure has a bright future in AEW. Yeah, well, if you didn't realize that after Revolution, then you're blind. Not you, but I don't see how anybody could watch that match with Sammy Guevara last weekend and not think that this guy was going to be one of the top three stars in this company, if he isn't already. In the next 6 months, one of the top three stars in the entire company. He's got that something about him. You know, they talk about that it factor. Yeah, maybe he's not the biggest guy in the world, but whatever it is, you know, there are some small guys who come along who don't have to be 6'2", 250 pounds. Whether it's Rey Mysterio, whether it's Daniel Bryan, even CM Punk. Yeah, CM Punk wasn't a big guy. There's just some guys who come along that have something special about them that the fans sort of latch onto. He's got that. Whatever it is, he's got that. Sean Spears. Sean Spears is still looking for a tag team partner. I feel like he's been looking for a tag team partner for 6 months now. So he and Tully Blanchard are asking potential candidates to submit their resume, I guess, via email and using a hashtag. So they're in search of a tag team partner. I hear that 9-year-old Nicholas is looking for a tag team partner. I don't think Nicholas is doing much these days. I guess what? Well, I mean, he's not 9 years old anymore, right? Nicholas, what would Nicholas be? Nicholas, I guess, would be 11? 11-year-old Nicholas? Hey, he's a former tag team champion. Former tag champion WWE. Unsigned free agent. I think Sean Spears could do worse. QT Marshall against Jake Hager. QT comes out there. He's got Brandy in his corner. Dustin Rhodes. QT and Dustin. They're going to be a new tag team going forward, managed by Brandy. That's the new thing now. They're going to be a new team. So we'll see if that goes anywhere. This was a nothing match. I mean, basic stuff. It's a win for Hager. He wins with his standing head and arm choke. Hager, Santana, Ortiz, they beat down Dustin. They beat down QT when the match is over. All of a sudden, Cody runs down, and he gets a chair to the back by Ortiz. Matt Jackson makes the save. He goes after Hager. He gets taken down. We were told that Nick Jackson was not there tonight for some reason. No explanation why, but Nick Jackson was not there. Neither was Kenny Omega. But out comes Hangman Adam Page. Taking his time, drinking a beer on his way to the ring. What else is new? He's in no great rush. He takes his cup. He rests it on top of the ring post. And then finally he goes after the heels. This felt like one of those old Sting moments. If Sting would have come down to the ring drinking out of a fucking bottle of Jack or something instead of carrying a baseball bat, he's almost like their version of Sting here. So he puts the beer down, he goes after the heels, and he wipes out Hager with the buckshot lariat, and then he flips off Matt Jackson. He flips him the bird, and he leaves. He was the most over guy here. That's all he did. People went nuts for him. And I had some people who were at the show who sent me messages saying, you know, he's got to be careful. Hangman's got to be careful. Even after the segment was over, even when they cut to commercial, he was grabbing beers from everybody in the crowd. If he isn't three sheets to the wind, it'd be a miracle. But they said, you know, with coronavirus going around, that's the last thing he should be doing. He's drinking beers from all these people in the audience. He needs to be careful. He needs to be protected. So next week in Salt Lake City, they announced that Cody is going to get his hands on Ortiz one-on-one. MJF, the Butcher, and the Blade, with the Bunny, take on the Jurassic Express. The Jurassic Express, there's another trio. We're going to see the debut of the Death Triangle in action, pack and the Lucha Bros. And they are going to give us the rules for the Blood and Guts match on the March 25th episode of Dynamite. That's the War Games match. Don't call it that, but that's the War Games match that they're doing in Newark. So we're going to get the rules for the match next week. We're going to find out how different it is from War Games. We know it's two rings and one cage. I would have to think they're going to make the rules a little bit different. I don't know if they're going to hang weapons around the cage. I don't know if there's going to be some other kind of stipulation added. MLW did their own version of War Games. What was it called? Oh my goodness. Was it Battle Riot? I think Battle Riot's a different match. But they had their own version of War Games that, ironically, Tony Schiavone called that as well. It was a couple of summers ago. So anyway, we're going to get the rules for that on Dynamite next Wednesday. NK, thank you for the super chat. Says, CubeBot gave us coronavirus. Help me. Well, I can't do anything for you. If you've been infected, you must self-quarantine for 2 weeks. But don't worry, you can still listen to the stream. I got you covered here. No worries. MJF, we had a pre-tape promo with him. He called out Jon Moxley. He said that he's going to get the next shot at the championship one way or the other. It doesn't matter who he has to go through. Doesn't matter who AEW puts in front of him, and he's rattling off all these names. He says, because I'm going to remain undefeated, because I'm better than you. And then before he can finish his catchphrase, he says, man, you know, under these lights, it's awfully hot in here. And he takes his coat off and he reveals a t-shirt that reads, I pin Cody. And he says, the shirt is quite distracting, almost like a neck tattoo. Yeah. Making a crack about Cody's terrible neck tattoo. And I get, you know, it's his body. He can do what he wants. It is a terrible tattoo. Like, the tattoo itself, the logo, the image, is fine. It's got the American flag colors. It's got the skull. I like skulls. Like, that part is fine. But the neck, the placement of the tattoo, I don't know what the hell he was thinking. Brandy doesn't like it. Brandy has every right not to like it. She's got to roll over and look at that thing every night. Looks like something is trying to swallow his head. But before I move on, before I forget, I did want to mention this. This was a big story today. MJF was in the news. I'm sure many of you heard about this. TMZ ran with it like it was some big fucking breaking news story, because they obviously, it was a slow news day at the TMZ offices. So what made headline news today was the fact that MJF was at a meet and greet, an AEW-sanctioned paid meet and greet, so fans had to pay to meet particular wrestlers, and one of those wrestlers was Maxwell Jacob Friedman. Now, if you've ever been to a meet and greet, and I saw this even on the Jericho Cruise, we had autograph signings, and MJF was there meeting fans, and he insulted almost every single person who came up to him to take a picture. He had this disgusted look on his face. He would flip them off. He would force them. He would physically grab their head and shove it up against his finger to kiss the ring. He was doing all sorts of shit. And for the most part, you know, people took it in stride, because they get it. The guy's in character all the time. They understand. Now, I told the story on the podcast of the guy in the wheelchair who wheeled himself up to MJF. And he would say, you suck, MJF. You suck, man. You suck. So, of course, MJF returned fire. He called him Hot Wheels. And he said, look, I've been sitting down for everybody else who's come up to me for these autographs. I'm going to do something for you that I haven't done for anybody else. I'm going to do something for you that you can't do yourself. And he stood up. It was awful. It sounds awful. But everybody was laughing. I think even the guy in the wheelchair was laughing. MJF wasn't laughing. He never cracked. He never broke. You take it for what it is. People are too uptight these days. So anyway, this might have been C2E2. I don't know where they were. He's doing this meet and greet, and there's a father and his son, a 7-year-old kid. They come up to MJF, and they're going to take a picture with MJF, and MJF looks over at the kid as they're taking the picture, and he flips him off. He gives the kid the middle finger, and this kid has an expression on his face like, oh, like he didn't know how to react. He was kind of embarrassed. Later on, the father complained that his son was really bothered by it. His son, you know, he's young. He didn't know how to react to it. And he's tweeting at Cody like this, you know, like he's expecting some kind of response or some kind of, I don't know what he's expecting, some kind of reward or something for what happened here. Like some grave injustice has been committed. And I got to give Cody his props, because Cody, and he deleted the tweet. And then he posted an edited tweet. That I don't like the old tweet and delete bullshit. But Cody posted a tweet. And, you know, he did the whole thing where, tell me where you live, and the next time we come to your town, I think he said, we'll invite you backstage and I'll even come say hello. I kind of wish he didn't even do that. Because now you're going to have everybody under the sun kind of begging for backstage passes and special treatment. But at the end of the tweet, he posted a disclaimer. And he said, you know what you get when it comes to MJF. And he was telling people, look, this was a paid meet and greet. This was not a random meet and greet. He said, AEW does not send MJF out for random free meet and greets because, and he was being, you know, he was kind of working here at this part. He said, because he's a disrespectful guy and he doesn't know, you know, the way he conducts himself. We don't condone that. But when it's a paid meet and greet, you know what you're getting. You can't go and meet somebody like him and know what's probably coming and then bitch and moan and complain about it after when he's mean to your kid. MJF went on Twitter. He basically said, fuck the kids. He pulled a Brock Lesnar. Remember Brock Lesnar with Heath Slater? I don't give a shit about your kids. Shayna Baszler a few weeks ago. Shayna Baszler. She just went through the same thing. She had a father complain. You said the word shit. Remember when Shayna Baszler a few weeks ago on Raw said, I'm going to tear the shit out of Becky Lynch or whatever it was that she said. And some fucking father goes on Twitter. He tweets Shayna Baszler and complains. My son was up, and my son, if I knew that you were going to say that, I would have put my son to bed. Like it's her fault. Like she sits there brainstorming the promos. Like it's her responsibility that this guy has his son, however old the kid was, watching wrestling at 9 o'clock at night. If watching wrestling at 9 o'clock at night you think is going to somehow damage your son, is going to damage your child, then maybe you ought to be a fucking parent and not let him watch at 9 o'clock at night, you brain surgeon. I was so happy when she responded to that guy and basically said, it's not my job to raise your kids. I like all these wrestlers basically rebelling against the children. This is a new revolution in wrestling. Brock Lesnar, Shayna Baszler, MJF, who's next? Who's next? Maybe Jake the Snake will come out in a couple of weeks and he'll do the same thing. Fuck your kids. I couldn't believe this is a TMZ story, really? This rises to the level of a TMZ story? Is this where we are now? That this makes headline news? Are you kidding me? Fuck the kids. Main event was John Moxley and Darby Allin against Chris Jericho. There it is! There it is. Somebody asked about it the other day, the disgusted Undertaker super chat. Now you guys got to tell me in the chat, what is he disgusted by? The kids? Probably, right? Strong Phoenix, thank you for the $2, says TV14 over TVPG. It's not even a matter of PG. You can have good television that's PG. It's just this sense of entitlement that these people have. Everyone gets so offended by every little thing. My God. Wrestling is, in its purest form, it's simulated violence. And I have people, you have these people complaining that their kids are scarred for life. These kids wouldn't have survived 30 years ago. Some of the heels back then, when they were protecting the business, when they were protecting kayfabe, are you kidding me? Anyway, John Moxley and Darby Allin against Chris Jericho and Sammy Guevara. So before the match, Moxley, he's coming through the crowd, and he gets jumped. He gets jumped by three guys in hoodies, and they brawl all the way into the concourse area. They're beating the hell out of John Moxley. They're throwing him into the wall. They're throwing trash cans at him. They're kicking his ass. They're beating him down. And Moxley keeps firing up. He's fighting back. He's not giving up, but it's too much. The numbers are too overwhelming. And what I loved about this, what was so great, I'm watching this, and I'm waiting for Darby Allin. I'm waiting for Darby Allin. He sees what's going on, right? Darby was already at the ring. He's watching all this on the big screen. I'm waiting for Darby Allin to come flying in off the popcorn machine or something and help out his partner. And there's no Darby Allin. And this felt like it went on too long. This went on for too long. This felt like it was forever. Moxley is just getting his ass kicked. Nobody is coming to his aid. And they keep cutting back to the ring, and you see Jericho, he's laughing, and Sammy is laughing. But there's Darby Allin. And he's standing there, and he's watching this, and I'm thinking to myself, Darby Allin is the worst tag team partner I have ever seen. I would not want to be in the ring with Darby Allin as my tag team partner. Now, Tony Schiavone, I think he tried to cover for it by claiming, oh, the Inner Circle, they jumped Darby. No, they didn't. As soon as he said that, you could clearly see they cut to a shot of the ring, and Jericho and Sammy are watching, just like Darby. Darby's standing there looking up, watching on the screen. The only thing he was missing was popcorn. So Darby ends up going it alone. He's got no partner now. It's a handicap match. It's two on one. And yes, Khalid in the chat. Again, I know that they claimed that he was jumped in the ring. My point is that they fucking lied. Because they literally, at that exact moment, showed him on screen. He was not jumped. He was on the outside watching the screen. Tony was trying to cover for it. There was no excuse for this. It looked ridiculous that he didn't attempt to go find his partner and help him out. Especially as long as this was going on for. So now Darby has to go it alone. He has to go at it by himself. And at one point, the crowd was obviously chanting some naughty things that I couldn't make out at Sammy Guevara. Because TNT, I couldn't tell you what they were, because TNT kept very annoyingly muting the audio. They did this like 6 times in a row. But Darby is fighting back. The people are totally into it because they like him. Again, he's got a certain connection with the audience. They like Darby Allin a lot. So they're behind him. They're rooting for him. And he hits a coffin drop at one point from the top, takes out Jericho on the outside and all of his cronies, wipes them all out. Gets back inside. Sammy's down, up to the top. Coffin drop, nails Sammy, has the match won. Jericho breaks up the pin. So now Jericho ends up on the floor. And Darby is going to fly. He's going to do a tope suicida through the ropes. And as he goes and he's soaring through the ropes, Jericho hits the Judas effect. And he connects with it. The back elbow to Darby, right as Darby is diving out of the ring, knocks out Darby. Darby hits the floor. He's out. They roll him back inside. And Sammy picks up the pin. So now finally, after all of this now, the match is over. Now Moxley comes stumbling down to the ring from the back with the chair in his hand. Very conveniently. Only after the bell has rung and the match is over. Now, I have a theory about this. My theory is that Moxley could have come out earlier, but he was pissed that Darby Allin left him to die and didn't lift a finger to help him. So he said, fuck Darby. Let him get a taste of a beatdown here. Let him know what it feels like. Only when the match was over did a vengeful Jon Moxley finally come down to the ring. And he had a chair in his hand, and he basically cleared the ring. Hager nailed him with a cheap shot from behind. So they beat on Moxley and, you know, dragged him up the ramp. And Hager puts him in that head and arm choke. And they powerbomb Moxley off the stage, down through a table below. I don't know how many feet it was. It wasn't that far down, but, you know, it was a big spot, big table break spot. And that's how they went off the air. So I guess Jericho is sticking around for the next 60 days after all. Again, his tour does not begin until mid-April. So there's no need for him to leave just yet. I saw someone earlier in the chat said that Moxley must be the one going on tour with Fozzy instead of Jericho. Well, I'll say this. As somebody who has witnessed Jon Moxley doing karaoke in person, I don't know that Moxley would do half bad if he went on tour with Fozzy for a few weeks. I think that might work. So that was the show. From start to finish, it was a newsworthy show, you know, for the Jake appearance, and he's got a client coming in. They furthered, you know, some stories along here on this show. The big angle at the end, laying out Jon Moxley, Jericho sticking around. Not as good as the last couple of weeks. I thought it was a good show. You know, probably even very good, but just not as good. Not as action-packed, and no one match that stands out. I think that's one of the keys. You know, we had that 30-minute Iron Man match with Kenny Omega and Pac. It was very good. There were some tag team matches on these shows that were very good. There wasn't really any one match that stood out to me tonight. You know, it was just a furthering of certain stories, and that's fine. You know, that's they're coming out of the pay-per-view, and they're starting to build stories for the next event. The next pay-per-view isn't until the end of May. But we've got Blood and Guts in 3 weeks. So we're going to get the rules for that next week. Let's check the Twitter poll and see what you guys thought of the show here tonight so far. Over, almost 1,400 votes in so far. 87% thumbs up, 13% thumbs down. So you guys thought it was an excellent show. NXT so far, 700 votes in. 63% up, 37% down. So pretty much in line with what last week's, I think, polls reflected. AEW beating out NXT. But positive scores for both shows. So that's what you like to see. I will have to get caught up on NXT. Well, probably not tonight. I'll catch up with it tomorrow. Have full thoughts on that on the podcast this Sunday. Of course, this Sunday is Elimination Chamber. So watch for the Elimination Chamber predictions probably going up by the end of the week. And you know, normally I would record them tomorrow night. Now SmackDown is on Fridays, so I have to wait. So my hope is that I'll be able to get some predictions up late Friday night on the channel. And then, of course, I'll be here live Sunday night for the Elimination Chamber post-show as soon as the pay-per-view goes off the air. So you can join me then for all the fun. Speaking of fun, why don't we dive into some of these calls here? I want to hear from you guys what you thought of the show. We'll take a few before we wrap up here. We won't spend too long on this. But we might have some people calling in who were at the show if they can get through. So if we do, and I'll look to see where some of these calls are coming in from. I don't see Colorado here yet, but if we get anybody who was at the show, we will put them on the air. Right now, let's start with 707.
Oh, let's go.
Let's go.
Hey, what's up, Solid Monster? Good evening.
Good evening. What's going on?
Oh, sorry about that. JJ from San Francisco, California. I believe I was looking forward to your show before, but man, it's great to be back in your show once again.
Well, it's good to have you back on. What'd you think of the show tonight? AEW Dynamite. Dynamite.
The Butcher and the Blade, as you would put it.
To be honest, I'm being an asshole.
Please continue. Thank you, Jason. Well, to be honest, I watched the show. It was compared to before Revolution, it wasn't the best, but I liked it. I liked the little small angle between Paige and Matt Jackson. I think that was interesting. Gotta be careful with Hankman at Paige when he's, you know, a little bit tipsy nowadays. But I think that was pretty solid, and I especially like the MJF promo. Excuse me, you know, Zoe, you see, though, he's such an ass at times, but hey, that guy can deliver and just brings me back to the good old days that we don't have these days anymore. But all seriousness, I think it would be interesting, just kind of from your opinion, what you think about next week's. I'm not trying to say war games, but blood and guts. I don't know what's your personal opinion about that, Solid Monster.
Well, I mean, we're not getting the match next week. We're going to get the announcement of the rules. I was saying before, maybe they hang weapons from the cage. We know it's going to be two rings and one cage. They've already announced that. So it's a war games match. So the question is, how do they spice up the rules beyond that? That's why I keep thinking weapons. Maybe they hang them from around the cage. Beyond that, you know, I don't know. I don't know what else can they do? What other kind of stipulation can they tack on to make the match interesting? It would probably have to be some kind of stipulation that has to do with the winner. So, like, if you win the match, the winning team gets something. Or the person who scores the fall, if it's one fall to a finish, you know, which usually these matches are, I guess they can make it elimination style, but if it's one fall to a finish, the person who scores the winning fall maybe gets a championship match against Jon Moxley. No matter where they are in the rankings, they can leapfrog everybody, and one night they can earn themselves an AEW title match. I don't know. That's what I'm as curious as everybody else to see what they announce next week. But if, you know, it's a war games match, there's only so many things you can do, right? Two rings, one cage. What else can you do? Let's go. Let's go to 901. 901.
Hello?
Hello.
Hey, Solid Monster, how's it going?
Good. Who am I talking to?
This is Marlon in Memphis.
Hey, Marlon, what's going on?
Not much. I'm leaving the gym now. But I had a question. It was in regards to NXT. So NXT is considered the third brand. It's been given television time on USA. I was wondering, what would your thoughts be about WWE replacing the NXT title with the big gold belt, the world heavyweight title, to give it a legit world heavyweight title, you know, a championship feel?
No, I don't think that's necessary. You know, it's NXT. NXT should have the NXT championship. Big Gold is in the past. I like Big Gold as much as anybody. I think it's a beautiful belt. I think it personifies what a wrestling championship should look like. It looks better than the frickin' WWE title. I'd rather they replace the WWE title with the Big Gold belt. Why don't they do that? I mean, I know why they don't do it. They love that logo. They love that logo. Every time the Super Bowl ends, what's the first thing they do? Look, it's smart. I give them a lot of credit. You had, was it Pat Mahomes or whoever it was, carrying their championship around, and you see the giant logo on it? That's why they do it. But I miss the Big Gold belt. But to replace the NXT title with the Big Gold belt, what purpose would that serve? You know, NXT championship belongs in NXT. NXT championship has a history of its own. You're just going to abandon that just to bring back the Big Gold belt? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Let's see here. 336. Here we go. 336, you're on the air.
Hello?
336.
Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, okay. My question was, do you think Lance Archer or Luke Harper is the one Jake the Snake was talking about?
Well, I mean, I said earlier, I think it's Luke Harper. I mean, it could be Lance Archer. We didn't see him tonight. I don't think Lance Archer needs Jake Roberts. I think Lance Archer will be fine on his own. If it is Lance Archer, then that's fine. You know, Lance Archer and Cody, that's a feud I can get behind. But Lance Archer, I feel like, is more of a sure thing on promos than Harper is. I think Harper is still unproven as far as being able to sort of carry the load on his own promo-wise. I can see a guy like Jake being a real asset to somebody like him, more so than Lance Archer. So in terms of necessity, I don't think he needs him. I think Harper would be the better fit. Let's see. Let's go to 980.
Jason, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing quite well. Who am I speaking with?
It's Raw from Charlotte.
What's going on, Ross?
Raw from Charlotte. I'm good, pal. Hey.
It's good to hear from you.
Hey, I thought I'd let you know. First time, long time, brother.
I love hearing it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You ever notice something about AEW whenever they start their shows that they don't be playing like the theme song like Raw do?
Wait, say that part again?
You ever notice that they're, you know, like the intros, right? Like you play the theme song, like the Skillet song, Raw.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And the AC/DC song.
Sure.
You notice they'll be doing that on, AEW, right?
Well, I mean, they have the last few weeks, I think they've had the cold open to Dynamite. But, you know, for the longest time, Raw had a cold open, too. They weren't playing the theme music either until they switched to Skillet. And ever since then, they've been back to the theme song and the pyro. But, you know, Raw was the same way. They ditched the pyro for years, and they wouldn't even open with the theme song. They would open up and say, you know, welcome to Monday Night Raw, and they would just go right into the first segment. So, I don't mind it, you know. Just go right to the action. We don't need the whole 30-second intro. Just go right into the action.
Fair enough. I just thought I'd let you know about that.
I was well aware of it, but thank you. Is there any other observations from the show tonight?
I mean, other than the fact that it's a terrible show, I just happen to think that having Moxley win that belt is pretty much a choice that is a terrible one, in my opinion. And another thing you've noticed that I've been looking at the view count for AEW every week, and I've noticed that a lot of the if not like all of the videos that on the AEW channel, is that all of them all involve Jon Moxley, and all of them are the highest viewed videos of the channel.
Well, I mean, he's one of the most popular guys in the company, so why wouldn't he have the most views?
Hey, no argument on here for me from that. That's all pretty much, man. Just thought I'd call in, just say hey, man.
Cool. Good to hear from you.
Oh, yeah. Bye now, pal.
All right, have a good night. Let's take a few more here before we wrap up. Don't want to go too long tonight, but I want to get a few more in here. Let's go to our old pal in Florida. 850, you're on the air.
Hey, it's all a monster. This is Christopher. So What were your thoughts mainly on the main event ending, like I said, with everything, with the triple powerbomb at the end? Do you think it was kind of AEW's way of saying kind of like F you to WWE with all that stuff from the past with that Jon Moxley with his previous stint with WWE with the Shield and everything like that? And do you think there's going to be any follow-up with that? Do you think Moxley may end up getting some guys to get payback with him, or do you think he's just going to do it all his own to get payback on them for what they did to him tonight?
Well, I mean, they got this Blood and Guts match coming up, you know, the War Games match, so my assumption is that he's going to be front and center in that match, and he's going to need some partners. So this is probably the kickoff angle to him going out and finding some help, and my guess is that the Blood and Guts match is going to be the Inner Circle against Moxley and three or four partners of his choosing. So that's where I think this is leading to. As far as the whole triple powerbomb Shield thing, I didn't even make that connection initially. You know, I thought about it after the fact. I don't think, I don't think it really had anything to do with it. I think people are going to read into it probably that way. You know, if it did, all right, you know, look, it's the old move that he and his buddies used to use, so maybe it's a little nod to the Shield, but that's not how I interpreted it. I just think they wanted to have a big angle where they, you know, put him down. We've seen Santana and Ortiz use that same move before. Remember when the Rock and Roll Express appeared on Dynamite? They did a similar thing to, was it Ricky Morton? Where they powerbombed him through the stage? So, to me, it just was typical Inner Circle stuff where they just put the guy down with a powerbomb. I wouldn't read too much into it. But I do think it's probably building to something at the Blood and Guts match where Moxley is going to have to come up with a whole bunch of partners to go against the Inner Circle. Let's go to Tennessee, area code 423. You're on the air.
Ah, Jason, how you doing?
Good. Come closer to your phone so I can actually hear you.
Is that better?
Not really.
Oh, hold on. I'm sorry. I got Bluetooth headphones in. I'm sorry.
Okay, well, sound like you're outside.
Is that better?
Yeah, that is better. That is better.
That. Okay, so I watched AEW tonight, and first time I've actually gotten a chance to actually watch a full show in a while because of my work schedule. But I thought overall it was pretty good. I liked how they brought Jake Roberts back and brought him out, getting involved in possibly a huge angle with Cody Rhodes. And, you know, I was just thinking of these different things. You know, they talk about, like you were saying, the whole bringing Brody Lee, Luke Harper, whatever you want to call him in. And they mentioned the whole 90-day no-compete. Now, how does that work? How can that actually keep you from going to another promotion? I don't see how that is even legally obligated, because so I've heard some guys that have been there that say it's just a bullshit thing, to like they just threaten to sue you. So that's why I'm always. Now, I could be wrong, but that's what I've heard. Guys have been there. But I will say this. The people that get mad at MJF for being a heel, quit being such a puss and grow a set. And if you think that's bad, you should have seen how it used to be here in Tennessee, you know, talking about the guy that called earlier, the 901 area code there in Memphis. Oh, you should have heard one of the promos I cut one time.
Well, let me ask you, let me tackle the whole question of the non-compete stuff. Although before I do, let me say thank you to Corbin Rogers with the $24.99 Freaky Jeff Hardy Super Chat. I was hoping we'd see Freaky Jeff Hardy. That is pretty freaky, if you saw that on screen. But he wants to know, will we ever get them old SE Scoops live podcasts uploaded to YouTube? Not to YouTube. I feel like one day if I end up doing the Patreon thing, that's got to be like a special Patreon tier. I have all the old episodes. I have them all in my archives. I'm waiting for the right moment. I need to figure out the right way to put them out there. But thank you for the $24.99. The non-compete stuff is interesting, because I feel like if anybody wanted to challenge WWE on some of this non-compete stuff, that it probably would not hold up in court. You know, I mean, Brock Lesnar had a similar case with them many years ago, but that was a totally different story. I mean, they tried to hold Brock to a 10-year non-compete I mean, he was stupid for signing that, but he was so desperate to leave, he just signed whatever they put in front of him. You can't stop a guy from making a living, though, for 10 years, you know. He can't wrestle, he can't do combat sports, so it didn't hold up in court. And he won. That's why he renamed the F5, he called it the Verdict for a while. Or at least they settled. I don't know if he won, but they settled. Anyway, so the whole non-compete thing, my understanding of the way it works typically is, and this is where some of the confusion was about Matt Hardy. Okay, his contract is over March 1st. How is it that he could appear for AEW, let's say, whenever he wants? Because his contract expired. So if you let your contract lapse, you are no longer under contract. That means you're not bound by the rules of any contract. It has expired. The only times that people are held to these non-competes are if they fire you, or if they let you go, they release you, you ask for your release like Sean Spears did, like Dustin Rhodes did. They were like the last two people that actually got their release when they asked for them. But it was months before they could show up in AEW, because you've got to serve out those 90 days. I think they pay you your downside guarantee, but you have to sit at home, and you can't go anywhere for 90 days. So that's typically how that works. Matt let his contract expire. He wouldn't re-sign, and now he's free and clear to do whatever he wants. He could have been on the show tonight. Who's to say he even comes to AEW, though? Maybe he doesn't. Maybe the stuff with the Young Bucks in his YouTube videos is just one big swerve. You know, maybe we'll see Matt Hardy pop up in Ring of Honor. Maybe we'll see him pop up on NWA. He can do everything if he wants. He can keep this going as long as he wants. The ball's in his court. He can do whatever he wants. He's got the freedom now that he hasn't had for a very long time. Chris Quillman, I did not forget about you. Thank you for the $5. He says he thinks Hardy is definitely coming in, but I'm not so sure he's going to be the exalted one. The clues were there on BTE and Free the Delete. Profane Gaming, thank you for the $2. Strong Phoenix with the $5 super chat. Says, if Brock Lesnar beats Drew McIntyre and Goldberg beats Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, I will be praying for your health, Solomonster. You all should be happy if that happens, because can you imagine me coming live on the air for that stream when WrestleMania goes off the air, if those are the outcomes of those two matches? You are going to get the mother of all streams. You should all be licking your chops, hoping that they retain their championships at WrestleMania. I'll have 5,000 people on this stream waiting and ready to go when I go on the air that night. I'm actually really looking forward to this because I have not ever been able to do a WrestleMania live stream. Because I've been to WrestleMania the last 8 years in a row, or 9 years, whatever it is. And I'm at the stadium. So this will be the first time I'm actually able to go live when WrestleMania goes off the air. So good, bad, or indifferent, you get me when the pay-per-view is over. NK, thank you for the super chat. And Magician Sapphire with the Russo on a pole, $10. Great show as always. Thank you. I appreciate that. That means a lot. Oh, there's the Twitter poll again. AEW, you can still vote at Solomonster. Let's take a few more calls here. Let's go to, I think it's another Florida call. 850, you're on the air.
It's me again, Solomonster. What's going on?
It's you again. Who am I talking to? It's you again.
The farting phone guy from Florida.
Oh, it's the farting phone guy. You know, it sounds so exciting. Oh, well, do you have that under control tonight? Is everything okay?
Oh, I mean, for now, you know, until you get some beans or something.
Right, well, we know how that goes.
I got to be honest with you, I wasn't going to call in but just because I didn't see the show, but people were telling me to call in, so here I am.
What people? What people were telling you to call in?
People in the chat, like, was it Turtlehead guy?
Oh, Turtlehead.
Some other people. Just
he's a bad influence. You can't listen to Turtlehead. He's a bad influence.
Yeah, they like hearing me on the phones, I guess.
All right. Well, since you called in,
I did have
what is your question?
Go ahead. I actually want to ask you about Monday Night Raw. If that's okay.
Oh boy. All right. Yeah, I'll allow it. I'll allow it. Even though normally I like to stay away from the Monday Night Raw stuff, but go ahead.
No, I know. But I wanted to get your thoughts on the whole Randy Orton and Beth Phoenix thing that happened. What do you think about that?
I thought it was great. I'm going to talk about it more in depth on the show this weekend, but I thought it was really well done. I thought Randy Orton knocked it out of the park. I did think that they could have gone a different way with it. I thought his explanation, even though, I thought it was good and I enjoyed it, his whole explanation about how I basically crippled this guy because I was worried that he was going to cripple himself doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. If he cares about this guy and he was trying to protect him and save him from crippling himself, then why would he basically try to cripple him? I think they could have taken the story a different way. So I'm going to hold off until Sunday and I'll lay it all out on the show then. Just, you know, a different direction for where they could have taken this. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was great. And I loved it. By the way, it was, I don't know how many of you noticed that they went out of their way to make sure that she kicked him before he hit the RKO, so that it was self-defense. He wasn't just mindlessly assaulting this woman. She assaulted him first. He was merely reacting. As he said on Twitter, you know, he's all about women's rights, equality for women. That is Randy Orton. Let's see. 407. I think this is another Florida call. 407, you're on the air.
Hey, it's All Monster. My name's Sean from Orlando. How you doing?
Hey, Sean.
Long-time listener to your podcast. Been keeping me up to date on the goings-on of WWE when I can't bear to watch it for the past 8 or 9 years or so. So I want to thank you for that. So I know when to tune in and when not to. I kind of grew up with the same stuff you did, like the late 80s stuff, big Mega Powers fan and everything.
Oh,
but,
that was the best.
I just want to comment about AEW. I'm 37 years old, and I was recently hospitalized for about a week.
Oh.
And nothing too serious. I got it taken care of. But I was in there for a week. I was able to watch Dynamite on Wednesday. And thankfully, I was able to get released about 5 or 6 p.m. Saturday night. And I didn't realize it till then, but I was so excited that I was able to get released that I could get home and watch the pay-per-view. And I had never felt that way about pro wrestling in years, probably since the summer of Punk. And so AEW has like reinvigorated my love for pro wrestling, and I could barely walk into my house and I was able to get down in. I was able to order the pay-per-view and watch it lying down on my bed. So that's how much I've been loving AEW lately. And also, I just wanted to say, I was one of those guys who didn't believe in the Young Bucks, who thought they just did super kicks and they made believers out of me on Saturday night. So well, I am a changed man when it comes to that.
Well, I mean, look, it was a good match, I think, to show people because it had a story that was built up for months. So instead of it just being a bunch of moves and a bunch of, you know, flips and dives, there was an actual story there, you know, and you had these two sets of friends facing each other, and it was getting, you know, escalating as the match went on. They were getting angrier and angrier at each other. So I think if you were going to show somebody a match of the Young Bucks to show them that they are more than just the flips and the moves, it was the perfect match for it because it wasn't just that the match was great. They actually were telling a story in the process.
Yes. Just every week I'm invested in everything. I can't say my feeling about WWE is when they do something good with like the Randy Orton Best 50 Phoenix thing. It's like, oh, they did something good. I hope they don't screw it up. With AEW, it's, oh, I can't wait to see what happens next. That's kind of the mentality I have right now. So,
well, that's great.
Maybe I'm not alone out there.
No, you're not. I mean, I get a lot of feedback from people telling me they don't watch WWE. They just watch AEW, or they watch, you know, AEW and NWA or some combination of other non-WWE show. Look, whatever makes you happy. You know, there are weeks where obviously I'm just sickened by what I see on WWE television. Now, I'm going to watch it no matter what because I have to talk about it and review it on the show. God help my soul. But that's my job. That's why I'm here. That's what I do. There are weeks where I love it. There are weeks where I absolutely hate watching those shows on Mondays and Fridays. But AEW has been pretty consistent, I would say, quality-wise. Like tonight, I wouldn't call tonight their best show, but it was a good show. Didn't offend me.
It was a good maintenance show.
Yeah, it was coming out of the pay-per-view, and they were setting things up for the future. And they're building towards this Blood and Guts theme show in 3 weeks. That's their next, you know, they don't have a pay-per-view until the end of May. So they're going to have these specialty theme shows every now and then, like almost like their version of, I guess, Saturday Night's Main Event or something. And so at least they have a goal now to build towards. But quality-wise, and I think this is why they've been winning every week. Yeah, everyone talks about the ratings when they come out every Thursday. AEW has, I think, won all but maybe 3 weeks head-to-head with NXT. And NXT is a good show, but consistently they have been able on TNT to, you know, deliver a show that people want to come back and watch. And for a new promotion, that's all you can ask for.
And with AEW, you don't have that fear of guys being called up or leaving the promotion and then getting ruined by Monday Night Raw or SmackDown when Vince gets their hands on them. I like NXT, but there's always that dread of like, oh, the day Adam Cole gets called up, he might last 6 months, and then all of a sudden he's a curtain jerker for all of a sudden. So I look forward to whenever WWE contracts are expiring for certain guys who would fit well in AEW, and that's kind of what I'm keeping an eye on for the rest of the year at least.
Cool. Well, hopefully everything is okay health-wise with you now. Hopefully the worst is behind you, I hope.
The worst is behind me, but I never realized, like, I literally rushed home from the hospital to watch a wrestling pay-per-view. Haven't had that feeling in about 20 years, so where I had to see something. So just love your show, man. Listen every week and keep up the good work, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it. So let's, I want to jump over here to the state of Texas, the Lone Star State. They say that everything is bigger in Texas. Let's see if that's true. 214, you're on the air.
Hi, how you doing, Solomon? So this is Christopher. I just want to tell you, I felt just like the previous caller. I couldn't wait to watch wrestling again, which is a great feeling. But I wanted to actually ask about 2 points. I wanted to hear your opinion. One was that Jake the Snake could be useful for a young person in that he could give not only the gift of gab to the next to Harper, but I think Harper could use DDT. I think he's tall and lanky, kind of like Jake the Snake was, and I think it'd be good for him to use. And the second point I wanted to make, I want to hear comments on both those things. And the second thing was New Japan. They could take advantage of a relationship with AEW to feature some of their stars right now that they can't do it in Japan. I think it'd be a good idea, but I want to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I've been saying that for the longest time. Now that they lost their TV on Access, now more than ever I feel that way. And supposedly they're in negotiations, I don't know with what channel or what network, but they're trying to get a new TV deal here in the States. That was a big blow, though, when they lost Access, you know, because Anthem kicked them off. Anthem owns Impact, and they didn't want to play ball. They didn't want to partner up with Impact, so basically Anthem said, fuck you, and they kicked them off. So now they have no TV. And you have AEW, who supposedly is, you know, willing and ready to work with them if they want to work together. And they've got primetime, live television, every week on this big cable network. It would only make sense. You know, they're trying to, you know, get a foothold here in the States to get some of their talent featured on AEW television. So I still maintain that at some point, probably before this year is over, they're going to come to their senses. And especially if they don't get television soon here in this country, if they don't get a new TV deal to replace the one on Access, then I think they're going to have this coming to Jesus moment, and they'll come together with AEW and they'll come to some kind of an understanding. Because imagine, you know, them sending a Minoru Suzuki or an Ishii or a Kota Ibushi to wrestle some matches in AEW. Kota Ibushi to reunite with Kenny Omega, do something with him. I know there may have been bad blood previously. Put that shit to bed. Do what's right for business. Figure out a way that you can work together where it benefits both sides mutually. And yeah, get those guys some exposure on AEW television. Why not? Why not? Plus, it's an asset for AEW. You get some of those big stars from New Japan. You can feature them on your television show. Why wouldn't you want to? You know, if you can find a mutual way to make money off it, then it just makes too much sense not to do. And as far as the first question, I don't remember his first question. So I was so focused on the New Japan question that I forgot. Maybe somebody in the chat can refresh my memory. I was going to answer his first question, too, and then I forgot what it was. Remind me in the chat what his first question was, as I thank Daniel Carr for his $2 Super Chat donation. Always appreciate the super chat. We had an incredible week last week. We had 3 live streams in 4 days, and we were killing it on the super chats and the traffic. So I got to thank everybody for all their support of the channel last week. Well, I guess nobody in the chat remembered what the first question was, so we'll have to just move on from that and go to California. Let's go to area code 408, and this may be the last one. 408, you're on the air.
Hey, Sasala Monster. This is, I've been a fan of your show since the mid-2010s. I used to listen to it on YouTube all the time. And I used to talk about, like, a lot of old WWE, TNA stuff. And I've been listening to you since then.
That's great. Well,
really love your work.
Thank you. Thank you. You were about to say what your name was, and then you you kind of pivoted to something else. So tell me your name.
My name is Justin. I'm an autistic wrestling fan since 2003.
Wow.
Used to watch WWE, and I've also a lot of WWE video games on the 6th generation and 32-bit console, especially ones from THQ.
That's great. That's great. So what'd you think of the show tonight, though?
I think it was pretty decent. I mean, good to see former Combat Zone Wrestling wrestler John Moxley as the All Elite Wrestling World Champion. Jericho's run has came to an end after he's been champion for almost a year.
Yeah, well, it wasn't quite a year, but he had a long reign, probably 6 months, right? It was about, well, let's see, he won the title at the end of August, so yeah, he had a pretty lengthy run with the title. Moxley is as popular as anybody right now in the company, so they put the belt on him, and I don't see him holding it for a year or anything like that, but he'll get to hold it for a while. And Jericho, I would imagine Jericho will cycle in and out. As he has other commitments that come up, he'll you know, pop his head in whenever he's able to. And even without the championship, you know, he's an asset to the show. You look at him tonight, working with the young guys, working with Sammy Guevara, working with Darby Allin. You know, he doesn't have to have the title to be an asset to this company. So we'll see who the next challenger is for the championship. MJF is talking about wanting to face Moxley. They're going to introduce some new faces in the next few weeks. Lance Archer and maybe some other people. So we'll see where they go with it. We'll see where they go with it. But anything else from the show tonight?
Oh, and that's just about it.
Cool. Well, thank you for calling in. And hopefully you'll call in again in the future. We do these every week. So feel free to call in.
Okay.
All right.
Take care, Solo Monster.
You too. Thank you for calling in. I think that's a good place to wrap it up. I know we have more people in queue, but got to hit the sack because, unfortunately, I got to wake up too early in the morning for work, which sucks, but I'm happy that you're all here to join me, as I am every Wednesday as we barrel through these shows. Here, let's take one more look at the Twitter polls, actually, before I wrap things up here. AEW, well, we're closing in already on 1,600 votes, 87-13. NXT, 818 votes, 64.5 to 35.5. And yes, I was reminded in the chat. See, I knew you guys would come through. Reminded me of that first question from the caller before that I forgot. Luke Harper, if it is him, if he is going to be Jake the Snake's client, Luke Harper possibly inheriting the DDT. I'm all for it. I would be all for trying to position that DDT as a big finishing move. You hit it once and that's it. Yeah, the DDT's turned into a setup move over the years. There are guys who use a variation. Even Moxley. Moxley's got the paradigm shift. It's basically a DDT. But I'm talking that traditional Jake the Snake DDT. If he wanted to sort of bestow that on a new client and have them use that as their finish, I think that would be great. I think that would be fantastic. My only hope is that I'm not talking this, you know, I'm not talking about Harper being the client so much that then it's not him and I'm disappointed. Could be Archer. Could be some new guy we're not even thinking of. It could be Matt Hardy. Could you imagine? Jake the Snake unveils Matt, for, what is it, 45-year-old Matt Hardy as his new client? Oh my God. Although I will say, Jake the Snake being somehow incorporated into that broken universe would be very interesting. That would be interesting. But no, Matt Hardy does not need to be the client. So with that, let's wrap things up here. I am going to have Elimination Chamber predictions later on in the week. I will be back for episode 642 of the podcast this Sunday, dropping on all the usual platforms. I'll get into the Randy Orton stuff with Randy Orton and Beth Phoenix. I'm going to talk a lot about the Dark Side of the Ring series. It is coming back in just a few weeks for season 2. I'm a big fan of that show. They're covering some very interesting topics this season. 10 new episodes. There's a double episode on the Benoit tragedy, but there's some other episodes in here on people like Dino Bravo and New Jack. It's going to be a very interesting series, and I will go into detail about some of these stories, including the Dino Bravo story, which is fascinating. How Rick Martel ties into all of it. I got a big show planned for all of you on Sunday, so hopefully you'll tune in then when the show drops, and then back here Sunday night live for the Elimination Chamber review. As soon as the pay-per-view goes off the air, come right back here to the YouTube channel, and I will be going live for my full recap of the final pay-per-view before WrestleMania. So, until then, be well, stay safe, thank you for all the super chats. And I will see you again, Sunday for the podcast and for the Elimination Chamber review. Until then, have a great week and take care, guys.